take your Bibles tonight, open them up to the book of Zephaniah. Just a couple quick comments, just to remind you of a couple things before we start. And we're going to start in chapter 2, verse 4. But the name Zephaniah means Jehovah hides, Jehovah hides. I'll remind you that he was the great-great-grandson of Hezekiah, one of the good kings of Judah. Only prophet that we know of that had royal descent. In other words, could trace his roots back to King David and was part of the king's family, king's heritage. He prophesied in the days of Josiah, also another good king. Between Hezekiah and Josiah, there was a couple bad kings. There was Hezekiah's son Manasseh, who was a very wicked king, although in the end of his life, he was actually carried away captive and then prayed and sort of tried to get right with God and tried to come back and write some of the things that he'd done wrong, but people didn't listen to him. And then he had a son, Ammon, who followed in his father's footsteps and was wicked as well. And God only let him rule for a couple years. And then Josiah was his son. So he was the great-grandson of Hezekiah, and like we talked about last week, Zephaniah and Josiah were second cousins, and so Hezekiah probably had the king's ear. In other words, they were family. He probably was welcome in the palace and had the king's ear. And as I mentioned last week, Josiah did lead the nation in a revival. He cleaned out the altars to the false gods. He reinstated the temple worship. He had a Passover. But it's not mentioned in the book of Zephaniah, and most Bible scholars think that it's not mentioned because Zephaniah recognized that it was just the people going along with the king, and the message never got down to their hearts. And they were just going along with it because that's what the, you know, the political climate wanted, so to speak. But Zephaniah prophesied, was a contemporary of Jeremiah. So they were on the scene at the same time. Jeremiah lived longer, prophesied more to more kings than Zephaniah, but they started out both to Josiah. And last week, we talked about the three-part outline that we were going to use to go through this book. Look within, look around, look beyond. Look within was to look at Judah and talk about the wrath that God was going to send on Judah and why. And you recall from last week that God's wrath came on Judah because they turned away from him. They turned away from his word. They began to worship false gods. They began to get an arrogant spirit that they did not need God. And that they did not want to submit themselves to his principles and his law. And so God pronounced through Zephaniah that wrath was coming on them. Judgment was coming on them. So that's what we talked about last week. Now, this, and again, that went from chapter 1 to chapter 2, verse 3. Tonight we're going to talk about look around. And you're going to see that Zephaniah will point in every direction. West, east, south, and north, I think is the order they come in, if I remember right. And he's going to point to all the nations that surround Judah, and he's going to say, judgment is coming on you as well. It's coming because you have also worshiped false gods, and it's coming because you have come against my people. And so the judgment of God is coming against you. Now, we're going to end up tonight with God turning back to Judah and making the point, now look, if I'm going to bring judgment on all these people that are around you because they are worshiping these false gods, don't think just because you're my people, you're going to get away with something that they're not. If you turn and worship these same false gods, after all that I've done for you, after I've, you know, revealed myself to you and used you to send my word into the world, don't think that you're going to escape the judgment, because you're not. It is coming to you as well. So look beyond. We're going to talk about that tonight. Look around. We're going to talk about that tonight. And then next week, Lord willing, we'll talk about the subject look beyond. And after the judgment is the healing and the blessing that God promises when the Messiah comes and sets up his earthly kingdom. So you're going to have to go through the judgment, but again, we're going to talk about it tonight. There's going to be a remnant of people that stayed true to God, And we're going to finish up tonight, and I'll just give you a preview. Sometimes if you tell folks twice, they're more apt to remember it. We're going to end up tonight with the prophet telling this remnant of people, wait on God. Just wait on him. Let him work out the future. Let him work out his plan. Don't despair. And I couldn't help but think how this message is appropriate for us today. Don't despair about what's going on in the world. God's still in charge. He still knows what's going on. He still has a plan. So don't get discouraged. Just wait on him. And we'll talk about what wait means. Because he's going to work it out. And after the judgment, which, by the way, is headed toward us, after the judgment will be that blessing when the Messiah comes. And we will rule and reign with him that 1,000 years here on earth before we go to heaven. All right, so if you have your Bible, Zephaniah chapter 2, verse 4. And the prophet starts by looking to the west, to the land of the Philistines. And he says, for Gaza shall be forsaken and Ashkelon a desolation. They shall drive out Ashdod at the noonday, and Ekron shall be rooted up. If you remember your Old Testament history, there were five tribes that made up the Philistine land. And these are four of them. The ones that is not mentioned is Gath. And who was that famous person from Gath? Goliath. Goliath of Gath. And like when we studied the book of Amos, Gath was probably already destroyed at this point. And so these four cities encompass the whole nation of the Philistines. And notice what it says. Gaza shall be forsaken. Ashkelon will be wasted and forsaken, desolated. Ashdod will be driven out at noon. And what that driven out at noon phrase means is it's going to come quickly. It'll only take a half a day. They're only going to last till noontime when the battle starts in the morning, and they're going to be destroyed and driven out. And Ekron rooted up. In other words, they again will be destroyed, and there'll be nothing left. Sort of in the farming analogy here, there's going to be no sprout left that might grow back into a nation. I mean, they're going to be plucked up by their roots, and there'll be nothing left to recover. Verse 5, woe unto the inhabitants of the seacoast, the nation of the Cherethites. The word of the Lord is against you, O Canaan, the land of the Philistines. I will even destroy thee, that there shall be no inhabitant. Again, the judgment continues with this word woe. Okay? Wrath is coming, you're going to be destroyed, and woe unto you, and that the Cherethites were a tribe of the, a sub-tribe, so to speak, of the Philistines. And notice that God says it, the word of the Lord. Zephaniah wants the Philistines to know, this is not his word, it's coming from God. He's just a voice, he's just a messenger. This message is coming from God. He says, I'll destroy thee, there won't be one person left. Not one person, no inhabitant left. Everybody will be destroyed. Verse 6, and the seacoast shall be dwellings and cottages for shepherds and foals for flocks, where there once stood proud cities, where there once was a strong people. All that's going to be gone, and it'll be pasture land. And there'll be cottages, and there'll be caves, and there'll be dugouts, so to speak, that will provide protection for the shepherds and for the flocks. But what he's saying is just look around you to the Philistines, look around you, because what you see now is going to be gone. It will be leveled, and it will be used as pasture land. And in verse 7, and the coast shall be for the remnant of the house of Judah. They shall feed thereupon. In the houses of Ashkelon shall they lie down in the evening, for the Lord their God shall visit them and turn away their captivity. So here we have the first mention in this passage of the remnant. Again, that small group of Jewish people that will stay true to God. And again, it should be an encouragement to us. This nation may turn away from God, but there's no reason why we can't stay true to him. This nation may turn away from his word, and this nation may pass laws that are against the laws of God, but there's no reason why we as a remnant can't stay true to our God. And so he was talking about the remnant of the Jews that were going to stay true, still going to go into captivity, still have to suffer the judgment of Judah. But God was going to see them through that judgment and bring them back, and they were going to, again, in the land of the Philistines, they will feed their flock there by the seacoast, and they'll lie down in the evening because the Lord will visit them. In other words, he'll come to them, and he will take them out of that captivity. Now, as I studied, and I'm looking at four different books, they were sort of divided, two against two. Two authors thought that this prophecy in chapter 7 was fulfilled when the Jews came back from their Babylonian captivity. The other two said, no, it's not going to be fulfilled until the Messiah comes and sets up his kingdom. But regardless of which one it is, the land to the west, the land to the west, get my bearing here. This is west, right? No. Okay, thank you. Is it your west? This west. Yeah, the other west. It's not your west, is it? No, everybody's west is this way. Okay. The land to the west. Sorry. The land to the west will be destroyed and will be given to the remnant of Judah for pasture. Okay. Then, in verse 8, he turns from the west to the east. He said in verse 8, I have heard the reproach of Moab and the revilings of the children of Ammon, whereby they have reproached my people and magnified themselves against their border. Now, as you recall, Moab and Ammon were descendants of Lot. They were the children that he had with his daughters. And so, ever since Moses' time, these two peoples had problems with the Jews. You remember when Moses was leading the people of Israel out of Egypt, they came to Moab, and Balak, who was the king of Moab at that time, sent for Balaam and said, curse me this people. And you remember the story about Balaam's donkey and how God said, Balaam, you can't curse them because they're my chosen people. So way back then, Moab and Ammon at the same time, they wanted Israel to be destroyed. Amos pronounced judgment on them, if you recall, when we studied his book, because of their cruelty to other people, because how cruel they treated other people. And they just basically had a contempt for God's people. And this judgment was coming on them because of that contempt. Now, again, I will tell you, there's a lot of people in the world today that have nothing but contempt for Christians, have nothing but contempt for God's people. You listen to me, the same judgment that came on Moab and Ammon will one day come on them. When you come after God's people, as we're going to talk about in a minute, you're coming after God. And God is going to protect his people. He said in verse 8, I have heard reproach and revilings magnified themselves against their borders. In other words, they were coming after the borders of Judah. They wanted to take some of their land. Verse 9, therefore, as I live, saith the Lord of hosts. Now, I'm promising this based on my very being. As I live, the God of Israel, surely Moab shall be as Sodom, and the children of Ammon as Gomorrah, even the breeding of nettles and salt pits, and a perpetual desolation. The residue of my people shall spoil them, and the remnant of my people shall possess them. So again, both nations, Moab and Ammon, were going to be totally destroyed like Sodom and Gomorrah. And you remember, you know, what happened to Sodom and Gomorrah. I mean, fire and brimstone fell from heaven and burned them up, wiped them out. I mean, a part of what's going to be a part of hell fell from heaven and burned up those two cities, Sodom and Gomorrah. And the same thing is going to happen to Moab and Ammon. The word nettles there means weeds. The salt pits are what results after the fire and brimstone fell from heaven. You remember Sodom and Gomorrah, there were salt pits that the people fell into as they fled. And it says a perpetual desolation. It's going to be permanent. There's going to be no recovery. Absolutely no recovery from this destruction. And again, it's mentioned the remnant of Judah, the residue of my people, them, and the remnant of my people shall possess them. They're going to possess the land to the east as well. And then notice verse 10. This shall they have for their pride. That's why the punishment is coming, for their pride. Because they have reproached and magnified themselves against the people of the Lord of hosts. And this pride was not only mentioned by Zephaniah. Isaiah mentioned it. Chapter 16, verse 6, we have heard of the pride of Moab, that he is very proud, even of his arrogancy and his pride and his wrath. Jeremiah mentions it in chapter 48, verse 26, talking about Moab. He magnified himself against Jehovah. And then he quotes Isaiah, that verse that we just read, and he makes the comment, they haven't changed. They are still an arrogant people, thinking they can come against God's people and get away with it. And notice what God says in verse 11. The Lord will be terrible unto them. He will be awesome unto them. He will show his power against them. And again, being destroyed like Sodom and Gomorrah is pretty awesome. When fire and brimstone fall from heaven and burn up your cities, the Lord will be terrible unto them, for he will famish all the gods of the earth, and men shall worship him, everyone from his place, even all the isles of the heathen. And again, when you raise yourself up against God, and against God's people, you are challenging God. Is God going to take care of his people or not? And God says, by my very being, you need to know I'm going to take care of my people. And I will destroy your gods so you can see how worthless they are. And I will destroy you that worship them. And when he talks about even all the isles of the heathen, he's saying, hey, it's going to go around the world. There's no place that I am not going to be recognized as God. Don't mess with my people, because when you mess with them, you mess with me. And in a contest between Jehovah and the gods of the world, it will be very clear who will come out on top. Amen? I mean, there's going to be no doubt. They would be destroyed, as would the nations that worship them. And Jehovah will emerge and be recognized as the God of the earth, the only one worthy of worship and praise. And Paul echoes that thought in the book of Philippians, chapter 2, verse 12. I'm sorry, verse 10, when he says, at the name of Jesus, every knee shall bow, and that every tongue should confess that Jesus Christ is Lord. And one day these people that pay no attention to Christ, that use his name in vain, that don't think he knows anything or has any power, one day they're going to understand that he is Lord. And they will bow and confess to him. So, judgment against the east. Now he turns to the south. Okay, I had to make sure. East? Yeah, south. He turns to the south. And Ethiopia, he says in verse 12, ye Ethiopians also, ye shall be slain by my sword, by God's sword. Ethiopia was the most remote nation to the south that the Jews knew about. It was further south than Egypt. And most of the time they had conquered Egypt, so they were in charge of Egypt. So when this judgment is talked about against Ethiopia, it's probably also including Egypt. And just one verse, but ye Ethiopians also, ye shall be slain by the sword of the Lord. You should be slain. And again, God's sword was given to Nebuchadnezzar, and Nebuchadnezzar came and destroyed these nations to the south when he was king of Babylon. All right, that only leaves one direction, the north. And so in verse 13, and he will stretch out his hands against the north and destroy Assyria, and will make Nineveh, which was the capital of Assyria, a desolation and dry like a wilderness. Now, at the time Zephaniah was prophesying, Assyria was the most powerful and influential nation on the earth. I mean, it was just flourishing as a nation. It was powerful. It was rich. It dominated the world of that day. Now, you know, the Philistines were in reproach. Moab and Ammon were okay, but they really weren't at the top of the world scene, so to speak. And neither were the Ethiopians. But when you turn to the north, and Zephaniah talked about Assyria, he was talking about the most mighty nation that existed at that time. I mean, the people that heard him say, well, yeah, I understand it, you know, I understand it about the Ethiopians. I understand it about Ammon and Moab. I understand it about, who's the other one? The Philistines. But you're talking about the most powerful nation that exists. You're talking about Assyria. And yet God said, I'm going to destroy it. I'll make it like a wilderness. In verse 14, and flocks shall lie down in the midst of her, all the beasts of the nations, both the cormorant and the bittern shall lodge in the upper lintels of it. Their voice shall sing in the windows. Desolation shall be in the thresholds, for he shall uncover the cedar work. Instead of a swarming population, instead of a powerful nation, it was going to be a ruin. And the cattle were going to, the flocks shall lie down in it. The cormorant is a pelican. The bittern is a porcupine. Both dirty animals, as far as the unclean creatures, as far as the world were concerned at that point. And these dirty animals, who usually only dwelt in the wilderness where there was no people, were going to make their nest and make their homes under the pillars that one time held up the buildings in Assyria, and they were going to make their and they were going to sing their songs in the windows of what used to be the Assyrians. And God was saying, "Your power is going to be gone." Verse 15. This is the rejoicing city that dwelt carelessly, that said in her heart, "I am, and there is none beside me." How has she become a desolation, a place for beasts to lie down in? Everyone that passeth by her shall hiss and wag his head. This was a city that rejoiced in their power. And when it says they dwelt carelessly, it means that they dwelt very securely. They did not have worries about somebody coming in and taking them over. Again, they were the most powerful nation on earth. And they said, I am. Or we might say it, I'm it. There ain't nobody like me. I mean, nobody can come in and mess with me because I'm the most powerful nation on earth, and yet God says you're going to become a desolation. I mean, you're going to be destroyed. And again, I think we see, if we look, we don't even have to look closely, but if we look, we see a picture of our country. I mean, you know, most powerful nation on earth, we've got that same pride. You know, don't mess with us. I mean, you know, we're it. And yet one day, I think we're going to see the same judgment come against us that came against Assyria. We will be ruined, and we, just like they, we became the ridicule. That's what it means. Passeth by her shall hiss and wag his hand. In other words, they'll make fun of him. Oh, yeah, you were so great. What? Look at you now. Just a ruin. And one day, that probably happened to our nation because, for the same reason, we've turned away from God. Ignore him. Okay, look at chapter 3. Now, so he's the prophet and God has looked to the west, to the east, to the north, or to the south and to the north, and now he's coming back to Jerusalem. And he's going to make this point that I was talking about before. Don't think just because you're my people that you can commit these same sins and get away with it. Look at what I'm going to do to all these people that are around you. The same judgment is coming to you if you continue to turn away from me. Woe to her that is filthy and polluted, to the oppressing city. The city he's talking about is Jerusalem. The filthy means they have been rebellious. Polluted means they are dirty. That rebellion against God led to depravity, and that depravity, as it usually does, leads to cruelty and oppression of others. And that's what that's what was going on in Jerusalem. They were oppressing. The rulers were oppressing their citizens. Notice what she did in verse 2. She obeyed not the voice. She received not correction. She trusted not in the Lord. She drew not near to her God. The voice of Jehovah was given to Jerusalem, both in his word and in the prophets. They did not listen to that voice. They received not correction. Again, correction came from God. I mean, we can look back and know throughout the history that God chastened his people to try to get them to stay close to him. And they would not, they did not receive that correction either through the voice of the prophets or the chastening that came. They trusted not in the Lord. They didn't put their trust in him. They put their trust in their military and in their resources, in their false gods. And they drew not near to God. They didn't try to get close to him. In fact, they went the other direction. And I just want you to remember, Israel had a special privilege. God gave his word through them. I mean, he spoke and corrected them like no other nation in history. And notice what, in verse 3, he mentions four groups of leaders. Her princes within her are roaring lions. Her judges are evening wolves. They gnaw not the bones till the morrow. Her prophets are light and treacherous persons. Her priests have polluted the sanctuary. They have done violence to the law. God has set these leaders up to lead his people. I mean, the princes who were supposed to rule and protect the people were now like roaring lions, devouring who those that they should protect. The judges did not judge fairly. They were like evening wolves that went around in the twilight and ate and then didn't leave anything till tomorrow. I mean, they just, took advantage of the people that they were supposed to be protecting. The prophets were light. In other words, they were empty. They didn't deliver the message of God, and treacherous, deceiving the people, giving their own word, not the word of the Lord. And the priests, who were supposed to interpret the law and oversee the worship in the temple, did just the opposite. They profaned the temple service, and they treated the law as unholy. And so the people that God appointed to lead his people were not doing their job. But God says, "The just Lord is in the midst thereof. He will not do iniquity. Every morning doth he bring his judgment to light. He faileth not, but the unjust knoweth no shame." God said, I'm going to be God. I'm going to be in the midst of this city. I'm going to bring my judgments to bear every single day. I cannot overlook this sin and be true to my character, is what he's saying. And so he said in the last phrase, the unjust knoweth no shame. Even though I brought my word and my judgment against this people, they have no shame in what they are doing. They are not turning back to me. He says in verse 6, and he's talking again to Jerusalem, I have cut off the nations. Their towers are desolate. I made their streets waste, that none passeth by. Their cities are destroyed, so that there is no man, that there is none inhabitant. He said, remember what I did when I brought you into this land? You didn't get this land because you were the most powerful, or even because you were good. I mean, you tempted me and tested me. God said, "I brought you, and I gave you this land because of the wickedness of the people that was in it. I brought my judgment on them." And again, let me read verse 6. He said, I've cut off those nations. I've destroyed their towers, their fortresses. I've destroyed their cities. There's no one left. Verse 7, I said, surely thou wilt fear me. Thou wilt receive instruction, so their dwelling should not be cut off. Howsoever I punished them. But they rose early and corrupted all their doings. And what God was saying, look, when they see how I've punished these other people, surely they will come back. They will come back to me. He says, they will fear me and receive my instructions. That's all I want. I want them to fear me, not be afraid of me, but hold me in awe. Know that I am God. And then receive my instructions, just obey. So that, and when they see all that I'm doing to the people around them and all that I've done to the people around them, you would think that that's what they do. They would fear me, hold me, and know that I'm God and have an awe about me and listen to me. But notice what he says. But they rose up early and corrupted all their doings. They got up early to do their wickedness. Started in the morning. And it went all day. And I couldn't help, as I was finishing up my notes last night, think about that song that we sing, Trust and Obey. You trust an awesome God. When you trust God, you're saying, you're God. And I hold you in awe. and I'm going to obey you. I'm going to receive instruction. And remember what the song says? For there's no other way to be happy in Jesus but to trust and obey. And then verse 8, and we're done with this. Therefore, wait ye upon me, saith the Lord, until the day that I rise up to the prey, for my determination is to gather the nations that I may assemble the kingdoms, to pour upon them my indignation, even all my fierce anger, for all the earth shall be devoured with the fire of my jealousy. Again, he's talking to the remnant, these few people that have been true to him. And he's saying, I'm going to gather the nations, I'm going to assemble the kingdoms, I'm going to pour out my fierce anger upon them, I am going to devour them, it will be total destruction, but I will see you through it. So just wait on me. Put your trust in me. Don't despair. Allow me to work out my plan. Judgment will be executed, but blessing will come. And again, I think it's a message we need to hear today. If we're not careful, we'll get discouraged about what's going on in the world. God just says, wait on me. You just trust me. I've got a plan, and I'm working it out. You just wait on me. Judgment's going to come, but after the judgment will be blessing. All right, glad you were here tonight.